Julia Findler. I work with Butler Snow LLP, and I've been practicing in the area of new markets tax credits for over 10 years.
And my name is Trey Parker. I'm with Butler Snow LLP, and I've been practicing tax credits for over 10 years, and close to 14 years now. Thank you.
Okay. So before we jump into what exactly the new markets tax credit is, I want to give you a very brief overview of why a project would and should want to do this. Why would you jump through these hoops when many borrowers can simply walk into a bank and get a conventional loan in what's usually a much more straightforward process than your typical new markets tax credit closing? We aren't going to get too in-depth here in this program since we have somewhat limited time, but there are several reasons to pursue a new markets tax credit financing, a few of which I want to go ahead and highlight in the beginning of the program so that you can keep them in mind as we further discuss the credit. So as we go through some of the intricacies and the structure and the nuances of the structure, all of which can come off as a bit overcomplicated, I want you to keep these benefits in mind. I want you to understand from the get-go why new markets tax credits are so beneficial and why it's truly a game changer for projects and persons in low-income communities despite its numerous complexities. And it is a complex process. I don't want to present it as anything otherwise. However, it is well worth any complexities and trouble that the closing presents. A few of the major benefits of a new markets tax credit financing versus conventional financing are as follows. One, new markets tax credit lenders generally offer below market interest rates. Though it does vary some, it's generally around 1%. Interest rates obviously fluctuate based on a multitude of market factors at any given time, but a 1% interest rate is pretty amazing for any loan under any terms. Two, new markets tax credit lenders usually offer more flexible financing terms than conventional lenders. So what are we talking about when we talk about more flexible financing terms? Well, we're talking about things like higher LTV ratios, non-traditional collateral, and much longer periods of interest-only payments, to name just a few of the benefits. There's quite a few more, but these are just some of the high-level ones we're touching on. Although many projects can simply go and acquire conventional financing, a third major benefit is that not everyone can. Or, alternatively, not everyone can accumulate the total amount of what they really need to complete their capital stack through conventional loans. This is one major way that new markets tax credits can come into play. So when your project might be experiencing a gap in their capital stack, new markets tax credits might be able to help. Our industry often refers to new markets tax credits financings as a gap filler, but it might be more appropriately described to the rest of the world as substitute mezzanine debt. In a typical new markets tax credit financing, the portion of the debt sourced from investor equity is generally indirectly forgiven after the 7-year compliance period. This is what I would say is the biggest benefit of a new markets tax credit financing. Now, this is going to make a lot more sense after Trey discusses in depth the structure chart that's in your materials later on. But it is worth mentioning here because the forgiveness of debt usually yields a subsidy of around 18 to 25%. Of the total amount of NMTC allocation received. Again, this is going to be much clearer once Trey takes you through the structure chart and it's put into context, but just keeping that number in your head, that's a potential 18 to 25% benefit that you didn't have before and you wouldn't have with a conventional financing. Finally, in light of our current economic climate, and before we enter our more technical discussion, I want to momentarily discuss one specific set of circumstances in which new markets tax credits can really be effectively used. One that I'm seeing is a real opportunity for this program, and one that we're all currently experiencing and is therefore especially relevant, and that's the pandemic. As we all know, low-income communities have been hit especially hard by COVID-19. Unemployment's higher, poverty's higher, businesses have shuttered at a greater rate. all in areas that were largely already experiencing economic struggles pre-pandemic. This has led to empty storefronts, empty office buildings, and we're talking about both blighted and depressed properties, as well as those that aren't yet blighted and depressed, but are just sitting there simply empty. The closure of these businesses, the emptiness of these properties, has had a ripple effect on the neighboring low-income communities. Many of these establishments had employees pre-pandemic who filled these empty buildings and thus spent their funds in the community. Without having those employees in those office buildings, in those storefronts, the dollars aren't being spent, and the community begins to suffer and becomes further economically depressed. This is a situation where the New Markets Tax Credit has proven to be extremely effective in spurring economic development since its inception. So this is not a new development for this program, but it is one that makes the NMTC very relevant at this time in history and under this current economic climate. According to a recent release by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, 9.8% of U.S. households had at least one member unemployed in 2020. This is twice the amount of 2019. To give this whole scenario a little bit of perspective, according to the CDFI Fund, which is the division of the U.S. Treasury that administers the New Markets Tax Credits Program, more than 830,000 jobs have been created or retained as a result of the New Markets Tax Credit Program since 2003. So if you leave with nothing else from the CLE, I hope that you're left with the realization of just how powerful an economic tool the New Markets Tax Credit is, and the knowledge that it's not only beneficial to the actual project receiving the credit, but it's also a phenomenal catalyst for the businesses and the communities around it, which is especially important right now in our current economic climate. So now that I've laid the foundation for how beneficial the program is and why it's worth doing, I'm going to give you some background on how it's worked. So this is the more technical aspect of the program, and a lot of this will be in your materials for you to refer back to. The New Markets Tax Credit Program, or the NMTC program, is administered by the CDFI Fund, that Community Development Financial Institutions Fund of the United States Department of the Treasury. It's a federal statutory program created in 2000, and it's currently extended through 2025, which Trey will also mention later a little bit about the extension. And it's designed to encourage capital investment in low-income communities that have had inadequate access to capital. For those who are really technical here, it is codified in Section 45D of the Internal Revenue Code. So how does this all work? Well, in order to understand that, first we have to talk about investment vehicles known as community development entities. We love our acronyms in this program, and there is a listing later in your materials that you can refer back and forth to because we use a lot of them. But for now, just concentrate on CDE. CDEs are eligible to apply annually for an allocation of New Markets Tax Credits through a rigorous application process. Before they can even do that, though, and submit the allocation application, they have to first be certified by the CDFI Fund as a community development entity. Many of the CDEs are already certified CDFIs, but for those that aren't, this will mean another application for them. However, this is only a one-time thing as opposed to an annual allocation application. So if you're looking to form a CDE, we can certainly talk to you about that. That's just one application. A CDE's mission, first and foremost, is to provide capital to businesses in low-income communities. Many CDEs also have secondary missions, but providing capital to businesses in low-income communities is their primary purpose. So you can start to see why this is so relevant for the COVID pandemic, because they really are trying to get funds into low-income communities, into businesses in low-income communities, which, as we alluded to, are really suffering right now. CDEs have what are known as service areas that they identify when they submit their allocation application. Without getting hugely in depth here, because this can get very technical, although a CDE can and many do have a national service area, many choose a much smaller service area in which to focus. And that means just a service area essentially means where you can deploy your funds. So You can have a national service area, but most find it much easier to have smaller service areas where they can concentrate. Whether that is a region of the country, some neighboring states, or sometimes not so neighboring, depending on whether the parent of the CDE has headquarters in multiple places, for instance, which we do see, or even just a city. There are several CDEs that are local to just cities. For instance, Atlanta has one, Detroit has one, and there are several others. A lot of CDEs like to have ties directly to the communities where a project they have allocated to will be located. So that's why they keep their service area small. They like to know that they're doing good in their backyard or somewhere that they have a significant presence. So that's why we see the service areas much smaller than national. There's also some processes with board members and what who you have to have on your board in order to have a national service area. And we can certainly discuss that if anybody wants to follow up on that. Service areas can be changed as CDEs grow or they change. You're not stuck with it forever, essentially. You can choose to change it, and you can do that in your allocation application, but a lot of them do tend to stick with the ones that they first submit or at least keep those and grow from there. Remember that rigorous application process that CDEs have to go through to potentially receive an allocation of new markets tax credits that we just talked about? I'm going to take the next couple of minutes to discuss just how rigorous that process really is and to break down the most recent awards a little more. CDEs have pipelines of potential projects in their allocation applications, and the allocation amount that they ask for is based on that pipeline. This doesn't mean that those are the only projects that receive allocation. And this also doesn't mean that if your project is in their pipeline, but it is able to receive financing from another CDE, you can't do that. This just shows that your project is ready to go, and it tells the CDFI fund reviewers who are reviewing the CDE allocation application that your project's reasonably ready to go, has a solid plan, and the CDE has a solid plan for the amount of allocation that they're requesting. Again, projects fall out, they fall through. So not your project not being in an application pipeline is in no way a deal killer. It's really just more for the CDE to figure out exactly how much allocation application they can deploy in any given year. The CDFI fund then determines an amount, if any, taking that pipeline into account and using a multitude of other methods that are way above my pay grade, and you'd have to talk to a CDFI fund reviewer for that. In total, in the last round, we had 76 awards totaling $3.55 billion. And over all rounds, we've had $61 billion of New Markets Tax Credit Authority deployed, pursuant to over 1,250 awards. Last year in particular, which we call the CY 2019 round because the program runs a year behind. So we are waiting on the 2020 round, and that will come out supposedly sometime in the summer. In the 2019 round, you had about 206 applicants apply for allocation, but only 76, so that's 37% of the applicants even received any allocation whatsoever. And although there was $3.55 billion available, the applicants all told did request almost $15 billion in allocation authority. So that means that only 24% of what was requested was actually awarded. So you can see that this is a super competitive thing. I've included in your materials some more in-depth information on the latest round, and I'm not going to run through it all here, but I will just briefly mention that of those 76 allocatees, 12 were minority or native owned, 12 focused on a statewide service area, so that goes back to the service area discussion that we had, 8 with local markets, that's citywide or countywide, and the awards ranged in size from $15 million to $70 million. This is fairly typical of the amounts of awards that we've been seeing recently. When we first started doing this, I would see 100 million plus awards, but that is not so typical now. They like to divide it up more. And so we do still see occasionally some big awards, but generally those are in like the $80 million range. Okay, now that we've talked about the benefits of the New Markets Tax Credit and had an overview of how the CDE applies for allocation and how it gets its status as a CDE, and seen a recent breakdown of the allocation awards, let's just talk about the credit itself. So what is it? Well, to attract private investment, the New Markets Tax Credit Program permits institutional investors to receive a credit against federal income taxes for making qualified equity investments. Here's another acronym that we like to use. Qualified equity investment is a QEI in CDEs. For every dollar invested into the CDE, a 39% federal tax credit is generated over a seven-year period. This seven-year period we tend to refer to as the compliance period. You'll recall that when we talked about the potential forgiveness of the investor equity portion as a major benefit of the program, we alluded to the compliance period, since the benefit can't happen until the compliance period has run. So this is the seven-year period that we were referring to in those initial that initial discussion on the benefits of the program. The credit rate is 5% in each of the first 3 years and 6% in each of the final 4 years of the original investment. So CDEs use the qualified equity investments, or QEIs, to make investments in, or loans to, businesses located in low-income areas. The tax credit investor does not bear the economic risk of the CDE investment. And just in case you were wondering what the CDEs get out of this, CDEs do receive fees based on a percentage of the tax credit allocation provided to the project. The higher the rate, the lower the subsidy. So we try to find the CDE who is going to give you the best deal, right? And because some of the CDEs were charging exorbitant fees for being conduit entities, the CDFI fund has started is to really look into the amount of fees and see if somebody is charging exorbitant fees. In that case, they may not receive an allocation award the next year. So that's something that's really started to be noticed recently. Contrast this with the investors who, the higher the rate, the higher the subsidy, right? So the higher the rate of the CDE, the lower the subsidy, the higher rate of the investor, the higher the subsidy. And investors do pay different rates for the credits, and the number fluctuates hugely with market conditions. We were seeing pre-pandemic 90 cents. Right now, we're looking at somewhere in the 70s. So you can see that that's really hit hard on that too. Trey's going to talk about this later when he discusses the structuring, but I did just want to mention how that investor equity works. Now that you know what the credit is, how do you determine whether your project is a good fit for New Markets Tax Credits? So once you think that you have a project that might be a good fit, there are a couple of things that we look at to determine whether it's moving forward with sourcing allocation for your project is worth it. And I'll tell you that there are people in this field who operate as tax credit consultants who often source allocation for the project. Typically, they take between 1 and 3%. So if you can source on your own, that's great, and we encourage you to do that. However, the consultants are an invaluable resource. And so as a lawyer, we certainly suggest that a project find somebody who can spend all of their time sourcing the allocation and structuring the deal initially. So that's just something to keep in mind if you have a project. Once you have a project, there are two sort of big things that you have to think about. I call these the threshold requirements, meaning if your project doesn't meet those threshold requirements, it's a no-go from the start. And then you also have the requirements that relate to the type of project, meaning even if your project meets the basic gatekeeper requirements and might technically work, they aren't likely to be financed. So before we get into the threshold requirements, we're going to talk about the second aspect, which is the project type. So is it a good fit? Well, we've included a few questions here to kind of give you the idea of what CDEs are looking for, what the program's looking for. So I'll go ahead and read through these so you get an idea. Do you need an infrastructure upgrade? Are you anticipating new construction, substantial rehabilitation, or expansion in the near future? Are you financing new equipment? Will your project create access to goods and services in low-income communities? Pharmacies, food pantries, healthcare, social services, education, childcare, these are all good candidates for New Markets. Will your project create or retain lots of jobs? And when we talk about jobs in New Markets, we talk about construction jobs and permanent jobs, full-time jobs and part-time jobs. All can count as potential community benefits. And that is really what CDEs are looking for. They are looking to find the projects that are going to have the largest community benefits. So if you can check a bunch of these boxes here, it's probably looking like it's going to be one that might be of interest. Will the jobs be quality jobs with a livable wage? Will they be offered to those with lower levels of education? Can your project close quickly? Again, these are all potentially good fits for a new markets tax credit financing. So what can new markets tax credit proceeds be used for? Well, I alluded to some of these a moment ago, but some examples of what new markets tax credits proceeds can finance include real estate acquisition, refinancing, reasonable working capital, site prep, substantial rehab, new construction, tenant build out, equipment, soft costs, closing costs, and reserves. Just as a side note, New Markets Tax Credits divides their projects into real estate quillickies and operating business quillickies. And since the inception of the program, approximately 75% of all allocation authority has been invested in operating businesses in low-income communities, and 25% has been invested in real estate businesses in low-income communities. That's really just a statistic. That's certainly not to say that if you have a real estate project, it's not going to get financed, and certainly not to say that if you have a real estate project, you shouldn't look to get it financed and run it through some of the new markets traps. And it's also not to say that if you have an operating business, it's automatically going to get financed, because that's not the case either. So what can't we finance with new markets? Well, there are a few things, some of which may be obvious and some may not be. We're trying to bring money, private capital, investment into low-income areas, and these things are not going to help that. We can't finance country clubs. We can't finance golf courses. We can't finance tanning and massage parlors, also check cashing businesses, and we can't finance anything that's gaming. So that does take casinos off the table. We also can't finance farming. That might seem a little strange, but the reason that we do that is because there are other incentives for farming. And so we don't feel that it falls underneath, needs to be covered under the New Markets Tax Credit. We also can't finance it businesses, the primary business of which is the sale of alcoholic beverages for off-site consumption. So technically we can finance restaurants. We just cannot finance a convenience store that's going to only sell alcohol, for instance. And that's not a great example because we can finance convenience stores, but something liquor stores where you're just going in and buying beverages and taking them off-site, that's something that we cannot finance. And finally, we can't finance residential rental property. We can do this when it's mixed use, but that again is a very technical discussion that we can certainly talk about later, but it's not something that we're going to cover here. So now that we talked about the is my project attractive requirements, we're going to talk about does the project meet those gatekeeper requirements or those threshold requirements, because if it doesn't, it's a no-go from the start. So we're going to talk about qualified census tracts, or QCTs. It's another fun one that we've got on your list. So QCT is another fun acronym. In most cases, the NMTC program utilizes geographic qualification based on census tract to determine eligibility. It's currently using census tract data based on the American Community Survey 2011 to 2015 information. Of course, we all know that we recently concluded a census in 2020, so the program will eventually switch to using that data once it's finalized, but until then, we're using the ACS survey. Qualifying census tracts have either a poverty rate that exceeds 20% or median income that is below 80% of the greater of statewide median income or metropolitan area median income. To put that into perspective, just on a countrywide national basis, about 40% of all census tracts are eligible, and about 36% of Americans live in eligible census tracts. Even though the qualifications that I just discussed with you will get you in the door, approximately 75% of all new markets tax credits investments have been made in areas that are classified as areas of higher distress. Well, what does that mean? That means that those are areas with census tracts with a median family income less than 60%, as opposed to the 80%, or tracts with poverty.
Esquire CLE's first verification code is RAP, R-A-P, RAP, all lowercase. Please take a moment to write this down. Esquire CLE's first verification code is RAP, R-A-P, all lowercase, RAP. Please take a moment to write this down.
Rates greater than 30% as opposed to the 20%. Or census tracts with an unemployment rate of at least 1.5 times the national average. Also, tracts located in counties not contained within a metropolitan statistical area, or an MSA, which are the counties we refer to as rural counties, or projects serving targeted populations. Again, targeted populations has kind of fallen out of favor, and we're not going to discuss it here, but it is something that we can discuss further. So we're going to come back to our discussion of hired or sus in a moment, but first, I want to throw in one additional requirement. While this isn't one that you're going to find in Section 45D, it's something that, as a practitioner, we always tell our potential clients. Once it's been established that a project is in an area that physically qualifies, and it's been established that the project is attractive for NMTC financing, we want to know how much financing is required. And one of the first things that comes out of that discussion is determining whether the total project costs are more than $5 million. Why do we say this? Because of a simple cost-benefit analysis. The unfortunate truth is that the closing costs in a new market tax credit closing are the same whether your project is $2 million or $20 million. So unless your project is right around $5 million plus, the benefit is probably not great enough to justify the cost. And I do just want to mention that we can combine projects. So if you have, for instance, we have done two medical facilities in different counties, but both owned by the same borrower, the same parent company, and we can do that. And what we do there is, as long as they both qualify, we can merge them together to make $5 million. So that's also something to think about. It doesn't necessarily just mean you can't do it at all, but we do try to keep that in mind. Next, I want to touch on what we call underserved states. While the New Markets Tax Credit has done an exemplary job of driving capital to businesses in low-income communities, it hasn't done so on a totally even playing field. And that's to say that there are some areas and some types of projects that have not received the same amount of allocation opportunities as other areas. Investment in these areas is encouraged by the CDFI funds. So underserved states are the states that have historically received fewer qualified low-income community investments than the other 50 states in DC. Each application round, 10 states are identified as the underserved state. And what happens here is the CDFI fund will look at all of the qualifications that have been made, and they will then determine the 10 states that have not received as much investment as the others, and they will release those in a set of facts for the next application round. So the current underserved states that from this next round were Florida, Georgia, Kansas, Nevada, New Mexico, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. So you can see that those are all over the place. Some of them have more rural, some of them are more urban, some of them have a lot more people than others. Some you would think are getting tons of investment, some maybe not. They're all over the place. It's not necessarily concentrated in one area, although here we've got Virginia and West Virginia together, and we've got Tennessee, so we've got a grouping there with Georgia, but they're all over the place. The list does change with each allocation round as underserved areas receive more QALICs. However, some of these states, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas, and I believe even Florida, have been on that list for multiple rounds for whatever reason. I also want to take a second and highlight Puerto Rico and the island areas of American Samoa, Guam, the Northern Mariana Islands, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. A lot of people don't realize it, but these are all eligible for New Markets Tax Credits. Puerto Rico actually has several CDEs, although they haven't received loads of allocation. But several of the others have never had any New Markets Tax Credits projects completed on them. So that is something to think about also. If you've got interest in those areas that you think might qualify, just because they're there and they're not on mainland U.S. Does not mean that they will not be considered for New Markets Tax Credits. Finally, I want to draw your attention to Indian tribes and new markets tax credits. There's only one CDE in the last three allocation rounds that has been a Native American tribal CDE. That's a CDE that's owned or governed by an Indian tribe. That's not to say that there aren't other CDEs that are largely focused on tribes, because there are, but they're not considered tribal CDEs. Through 2019, only $3.9 billion of the total NMTC investment, and if you remember, we had over $60 billion, so only $3.9 billion of that has gone to tribes. And I can tell you that while there's been a focus recently on getting more and more investment into their hands, it has not yet substantially changed, which is why groups like the Native American Finance Officers Association are working to get more NMTC investment into Indian country. There has been an encouraging step recently when the CDFI fund added a check-the-box place on the allocation application, asking the applicant whether the project will benefit a tribal community. Ultimately, the push by many groups is to actually earmark a portion of the allocation authority specifically for projects in Indian country, but we aren't there yet. And when people ask about why we aren't there yet, there have been a number of reasons suggested, but most people believe that the complexities of Indian country financings are just not adequately understood by the people reviewing the allocation applications. But I do want you to keep in mind Indian country also for NMTC financing, because this is something that the tribes are taking advantage of and would like to take more advantage of, and they do have projects that will work here. So just keep that in mind. The next two areas that I want to draw your attention to are food deserts and MUAs. Food deserts are areas that lack access to healthy, affordable foods. This is like low-fat products, fruits and vegetables, healthy grains, things that you can't necessarily walk into just any convenience store and pick up easily. And across the U.S., we have about 19 million people, or approximately 6.2%, that live in a food desert, according to the latest USDA food access report. And that was from 2017. So unfortunately, now with the pandemic shuttering so many businesses, that's probably been cut into even more. Food deserts are often in urban areas where fast food is prevalent. And we also see them sometimes in very rural areas where access to all types of goods and services is limited. Those living in food deserts tend to have higher levels of obesity, diabetes, and other chronic diseases than those who don't. Next are medically underserved areas. Medically underserved areas have too few primary care providers. They don't have access to hospitals that the rest of us do. They don't have access to clinics. They have high infant mortality rates, higher poverty, higher elderly populations. And we talk about them and about food deserts and about tribes because they're areas of focus for those CDE lenders that we talked about. In our limited time in this presentation, we're not going to delve into every area of how the credit works or every single type of project that's attractive to new markets tax credit lenders. But there are some areas, these areas, the tribes, the MUAs, the food deserts, are some of the areas on which lenders place the biggest focus. So they're also, MUAs and food deserts are also two of the criteria that make up what we call the severely distressed secondary classifications. If you recall, we briefly highlighted what constitutes an area of severe distress earlier. This is also included in your materials if you'd like to glance back. But remember, those severe distress or those projects are 75% of the allocation has gone to projects that are severely distressed. Those are the ones, like we said, that had the 30% poverty, the 60%. That's these guys. If you don't have those, one of those two things, you can take two or more of the secondary criteria and still get a classification of severely distressed. There's a long list of this. It's included in your materials. I've included it, but I'm not going to read through them all here. Again, MUAs are one, food deserts are one, SBA hub zones are one, brownfields, colonious areas, those are all things that can be utilized. Now, just to keep in mind that even though being in an MUA can give you a secondary classification, you have to be doing a project that's going to alleviate that, right? So you would have to be doing something, building a doctor's office, a clinic, an addiction center, something that's going to alleviate some of that MUA designation. That's the same thing with the food deserts. You'd have to be building a grocery store or a co-op or something like that. So that's just something to keep in mind. And that's all included for you to review. Next, Trey is going to take you through a typical new markets tax credit financing and how to structure it.
Great. Thank you, Julia. So how do we bring all of this together and get it into all of this financing into an actual project? And so let's basically start with the assumption that, as Julia walked you through, you've gone through this process of securing an allocation for your project from a CDE or multiple CDEs, as the case may be, depending upon the project size. And your consultant has been successful, or you have been successful in getting that allocation. And so, what does it mean when we speak of an allocation? So, let's just say you've got a $10 million allocation from a CDE for your project. That does not mean that you get $10 million worth of new market tax credits. It means that you have $10 million worth of qualified equity investment making authority for that project. And so for that $10 million in allocation that you receive, you will receive 39% of that in tax credits. The investor will, and then the investor will pay a portion of that as equity. And so that portion would, as Julia said, ranged most recently within almost a year and a half to be between 70 to 90 cents on the dollar per credit. So you'll understand immediately that there is a gap that you need to make up in order to generate that qualified equity investment total of $10 million. In combining that with the new market tax credit investors' equity. And so we get there by doing what we call a leveraged loan scenario, where either debt from a project lender that is generally affiliated with the qualified active community business, the Qualic B, the ultimate project borrower, serves essentially as an aggregator entity for all the various outside sources, and that can be, and we'll walk through those later, what those sources can be, but let's just say it's typically a debt funding scenario. So that debt would basically be the balance between the delta of the investor's equity amount that it actually puts into the project and the amount of qualified equity investment that needs to be made. And so let's just assume, for simple purposes, and we'll get into a more detailed example later, that if you have, say, $2 million in equity coming in, you will need $8 million to get to that qualified equity investment amount. And so what happens is that the investor will form an entity, typically a special purpose entity, called an investment fund, and it will make, it's a bank, and so that bank would make the equity investment into the investment fund, which is typically a limited liability company. And then it would receive also the proceeds of the leveraged loan. And so it would essentially aggregate the investor's equity with the leveraged loan and then turn around and make the qualified equity investment into the CDE. And as soon as it makes that qualified equity investment, that is the moment in which the actual new market tax credits are generated. And so the investor can immediately take advantage of the first year's tranche of the new market tax credits, Unlike other programs, for instance, the historic tax credit program, which requires an upfront equity investment, but the credits do not become available until the project is actually placed in service. And typically, there is a substantial period of time from that initial equity investment up until that moment of placed in service. But new market tax credits, the result of the investment is immediate as far as the tax credits are concerned. And then the CDE will turn around and typically loan the proceeds to the qualified active low-income community business, the QALIC-B, which is the project, quote unquote. And that loan could be equity from the CDE into the project entity, but we've seen that be really the unfavored structure. So we typically, I'd say 99% of the time, we see these CDEs proceeds from the QEI being made as loans to the project as opposed to equity investments. And the qualities are corporations or partnerships, and they have to meet certain requirements as far as how they operate their business and where and how much of that business is located in the low-income census tract, which is, as Julia mentioned earlier, is a threshold requirement. So there's detailed compliance requirements for the QALIC-Bs, but we won't get into them. Let's just say for our typical project that we're project is 100% located in a qualifying census tract. And so the loan is structured typically is bifurcated, and what that means is that we'll have an A loan and a B loan, and the A loan will correspond to the portion of the qualified equity investment that was sourced from the leveraged loan, and that can, like we said, can either typically takes the form of debt aggregated at the leveraged lender level. But it can come from a variety of sources, but it is essentially converted to debt at the leveraged lender level and then loaned to the investment fund. And then the other portion of the loan is what we refer to as typically called the B loan, which corresponds to the amount of new market tax credit equity that the investor puts in. And so the QALIC-B then use the proceeds of those two loans to finance the project, and those loans are typically structured to be interest only for 7 years, and that interest rate, as Julie mentioned, is typically very below market. We see it typically between 1 to 2%, most likely closer to 1%, and that rate is sized sufficiently to pay interest on the leveraged loan, and that leveraged loan will have to be as well interest only for that 7-year period, cannot amortize. And the reason behind that is that if the investor receives anything that is above and beyond the interest payments on the leveraged loan, that is a return of its equity investment into the CDE, and that would cause a recapture event as well. And that rate also is designed to be sized sufficiently to pay the annual fees that are owed by the project to the QALIC-B, and those fees typically cover essentially the cost of managing the asset as well as their tax preparation costs as well. And so let's dig into an example, a $15 million new markets allocation for a project that has the corresponding total cost of $15 million. And so you'll see in the upper left-hand corner and as well as the upper right-hand corner, this is what we call the upper tier. And the lower tier is essentially everything below the CDE level. And so at the upper tier, you'll see the leveraged loan and the leveraged lender and the new markets investor, both in putting their proceeds of their various fundings into the investment fund. And so the leveraged lender, well, let's start with the new markets investor. So in this scenario, the new markets investor is putting in 73 cents on the dollar per credit of the $15 million allocation, which at 39% of $15 million will produce approximately $5.85 million in new market tax credits. And so the investor is paying 73 cents on the dollar per credit. And that equity, gross equity, comes out to be $4.27 million and some change. And so it makes that equity investment into the investment fund. And the investment fund simultaneously borrows the leveraged loan, which would be that delta between that $4.2 $7 million and the $15 million number. And so that comes out to be $10.7295 million. And so that gets lent to the investment fund, which turns around and makes the $15 million qualified equity investment into the CDE. And so immediately at that point, that equity investment generates $5.85 million in new market tax credits. Before the CDE loans the proceeds of that equity investment to the Qualic B, it will first take out its various fees, which are a percentage of the allocation it brings to the table, as well as its various initial asset management fee and as well as their transaction costs, i.e. their attorneys and other folks involved in getting the CDE allocation deployed. And so you'll see that breaks out, the CDE's equity investment proceeds will break out into an A loan and a B loan. And as you'll see, the A loan corresponds to the leveraged loan amount, and the B loan corresponds to a portion of the equity investment amount, essentially minus the fees that were paid out at closing. And so that comes out to be approximately $3.5 million. And so that those funds come into the Qualic B, and basically after that, all of the fees and so forth are left over. That is where you see that 15 to 25% benefit of the allocation, which essentially corresponds to that 3.5 or so million in the B loan that is left over. And you'll also see that the Qualic B is owned by an entity that we call the sponsor or the guarantor, and the sponsor typically guarantees a number of things throughout the time period. And one of the 7-year compliance period for the funding, and one of those are basically your completion deficits, your operating deficits, and any recapture event that would occur that would result in a recapture of the new market tax credits to the investor. And so what are the key issues that arises when we're structuring a deal like this? Number one, typically is the most difficult, and that could be the sources of the leveraged loan. And the sources of the leveraged loan can be essentially sponsor cash or equity. It can be debt sourced through a typical commercial lender. And it can also be coming in the form of grants or bond financing. And each one of these, except for cash and equity, obviously, has its own hang-ups that you have to address. And so the biggest issue for a debt provider for the leveraged loan, and the reason why there's a leveraged lender entity and not just direct debt to the investment fund is that the investment fund is 100% owned by the Newmarket's investor, and they do not want to obviously be signed up for any project-related debt and be responsible for that borrowing. So we essentially insert an affiliate of the project or the sponsor directly to serve as the
Esquire CLE's second verification code is ELK, E-L-K, all lowercase, ELK. Please take a moment and write this down. Esquire CLE's second verification code is ELK, E-L-K, all lowercase, ELK. Please take a moment and write this down.
The lender itself and that entity would be the borrower of the what we call the source loan of the leveraged loan. And so that and the biggest obstacle for many debt providers in getting comfortable with making a source loan to a leveraged lender is that as you can see is that the leveraged lender is very well removed from the ultimate typically is very well removed from the ultimate collateral of the project, which resides at the on the lower tier level. And so what does that security typically look like? And how do you get comfortable knowing with a lender that is very far removed from that collateral? Basically, we have set up a chain such that in the event of a default or foreclosure event, the structure can essentially collapse down to have the source lender have a direct collateral arrangement with the collateral itself. And that's typically done by giving the source lender a pledge of the leveraged loan documents, and the leveraged loan documents between the leveraged lender and the investment fund will have a pledge of the investor's interest in the CDE through its qualified equity investment. And such, when the leveraged lender executes on that pledge, then the pledge of those leveraged loan documents to the source lender will allow the source lenders to essentially assume the role of the CDE as the direct lender to the project. So that is how we typically can get the leveraged lender source lenders comfortable that you can actually have eventual access to the collateral. And there's also ways that if the affiliate leveraged lender it has its own going concern and has property of its own, it can provide that direct collateral to the source lender such that it wouldn't have to necessarily rely on the just the collateral of the collapsing scenario that I just went through. And so so that those are the can be the most challenging parts of putting together a Newmarket tax credit transaction is in fact going to find a lender who would be willing to come in and serve as that role. And so other key structuring issues, the form of the QALIC B, what does that look like? And it can be an LLC, a corporation, a partnership, a nonprofit. Nonprofits are certainly the preferred entity in the Newmarket's world because it just allows that net benefit to solidify and to be sure that you're going to achieve that net benefit when the project unwinds there. And then Julia touched on earlier whether the QALIC B is a real estate or operating business. If it's a real estate business, then the compliance scenario can be pushed down to the tenants, such that the tenants will cannot be one of the disqualified businesses that Julia mentioned earlier, like a golf club or golf country club, golf course, sorry. And then the other option is the operating business, where the Qualic B is the operating business, and so said that the compliance for that entity will be tested at that level through what we call an agreed upon procedures agreement, where the accountants will basically go in and make sure annually that the project is meeting all the requirements of a Qualic B. And then also the other main key structuring issue is to make sure that this new market tax credit financing is also meshing well with and works with other potential sources of financing for the project. So once the CDE has made the loans to the Qualic B, what happens for this during the 7-year period passes after that? And so the proceeds of the two loans will be deposited into a controlled account, and that account is controlled by the CDE lenders. And this proceeds must be expended within 12 to 18 months of closing of the new market tax credit financing. That really puts a lot of pressure on projects to essentially be shovel ready, so that when they receive these new market proceeds, that they can get these the proceeds out the door in fairly short order. Oftentimes, where there is multiple financing involved, the new market tax credit funding will be the first to go out the door because of this requirement. And one of the other main issues with being a leverage lender, a source lender to the leverage lender, let's put it that way, is that the leverage lender itself cannot foreclose on its security interest, i.e. it's the pledge of the investment fund's membership interest in the CDE during the compliance period. Because if that occurs, then the equity investment by the new markets investor has gone away, and that is a recapture of the credits. And during that period, the Qualic B, as well as potentially a sponsor, will have certain periodic financial reporting requirements, basically reporting on the operational success of the project, and as well as the financial health of both the Qualic B and the sponsor, so that they can continue to meet their various obligations. And you'll need to produce an annual budget, as well as other expenses as well. And you also have to do annual reports on the community benefits generated by the project, i.e. the number of jobs created or retained, the quality and amount of services that have been delivered by the Qualic B. And the new market tax credits, I mentioned this earlier, there's a requirement that the recapture, that there be a recapture guarantee in place for that 7-year period. So if there is a recapture event, then the investor can be made whole. And then at the end of the 7-year period, there is an exit, and that can be relatively complicated, so I won't go into the details of how that works, but essentially the structure will collapse, and there will result in the leveraged lender or sponsor affiliate, as the case may be, whoever will be the put party to the investor's interest in the CDE, will become the holder of the A loan and the B loan. The A loan often at that point gets refinanced with the source lender or another lender, as the case may be. But that entity is still holding on to the B note, and that B note is typically forgiven at that point. And that can either result in forgiveness of indebtedness income if the Qualic B is a for-profit entity, Or there, we can structure that exit in order to manage that potential tax hit for for-profit quality bees. And so we suggest that as time leads up to the exit, typically around the 3 or 4 month period, that we start discussions with the client as to exactly how that exit will look like. And so what other subsidies can we use with new market tax credits? We often see the most, I would say, historic tax credits, what we call twin deals, where the historic equity is used as an equity source as opposed to a lending source like the new market tax credits, and so that those programs can be combined together. There are some hang-ups involved with using bridge loans and on the historic side to finance the new markets leverage side, and we certainly won't go into this now, but it's and often we see the program twin with the new markets program. Same for energy credits, USDA and SBA loans. We've been very successful at marrying those two programs up together. The main issue in those cases is that USDA and SBA proceeds cannot be used as leverage, so you have to figure out how to incorporate those directly into the financing. Other unique ones, EB-5 and PACE financing, typically both of those take the forms of outside debt. And then opportunity zones, we have used opportunity zones as basically essentially an additional equity source at the quality B level. Unfortunately, opportunity zone financing cannot be used to fund leveraged loans. But we've seen, because opportunity zones and new market tax credits, qualified census tracts overlap, we have seen that quality bees being able to take advantage of that equity sources. And then finally, state new market tax credits. Many states have adopted programs that essentially mirror the federal program, and they can be used together, essentially side by side, or stacked on top of each other, depending upon what the program is. And so it just adds an additional subsidy to the project. One credit that cannot be used with new markets is the LIHTC credit. And as Julian mentioned, you cannot fund pure residential housing using the new market tax credit, so that obviously does away with the possibility of using LIHTC. However, there are creative ways where you can potentially combine, not combine the two together into one financing, but can do separate LIHTC project alongside your new markets project if your project is so designed to have a substantial residential component. Okay, so that's a rundown of the basics of a new markets transaction. So what does the future of the new markets credit look like? So currently, the new markets program expires on December 31st, 2025. We have had, has been legislation that's introduced in the Senate and the House to make the new market tax credit a permanent funding. Typically, up until 2020, we had had to get annual authorizations for the credit, and that was made it really hard to have a very consistent approach to the industry, where we were essentially going back to Congress on an annual basis for to continue the program. But now that it's been extended to 2025, it's been much more efficient for us. And the benefits from that expansion of the program through 2025, one nice thing about the new markets program is that it's highly quantifiable as far as the success is concerned. And so we've been able to essentially estimate based upon past success of the program, what the next essentially 4 years of funding would look like. And so we're estimating that it's going to create 690 new manufacturing expansions and industrial projects, 275 mixed-use projects combining housing, commercial, and social services, 255 new or improved health clinics, hospitals, and medical offices, and 775 investments in daycare centers, boys and girls clubs, and other community facilities. And all told, we are estimating that that will generate approximately 590,000 jobs. So as you can see, based upon this and the past data as well as available online, as how truly successful the New Markets Program has been in generating economic development and job creation in these low-income census tracts. And so, as we said, the success comes from the benefit of the project in the form of that 18 to 25% of the allocation received. And if you place it side by side on a financial analysis, you can clearly see that the benefits of doing a new markets financing as opposed to a conventional financing. And then just to make sure you remember that there are only certain businesses that can qualify, and if you have one of the businesses that are in most favor these days, your likelihood of success in securing an allocation is very, very much elevated. So that concludes our presentation. We hope you found it very informative. Our contact information is included in the packets for Julia and myself. And so we are always available and happy to answer any questions that you may have regarding the program. And we make ourselves available as a continued resource for everybody. So thank you very much for your time. And have a great day.